To Shattering Myths. We're going to turn our attention now to Yahweh's Torah, but before we do, we had a call during the break that the listeners at work, and so wanted to listen online, but couldn't stay online to pose his question. But Grady from Pennsylvania called and wanted to know Yah's position on communing with spirits, and specifically, who are the spiritualists and mediums talking to when there's a show have been for many years now, shows on a very number of channels about mediums and spiritualists and them revealing secrets about individuals that would be hard to know otherwise. And I'm here to tell you most of those people are just out-and-out frauds. That doesn't mean that they're all out-and-out frauds, but the ones who are not frauds are more dangerous still. And I'd be careful here for those who may watch some of these shows, some of the medium and spiritualist shows, is that evil doesn't usually come across as mean-spirited and satanic. For the most part, evil tries to masquerade as good. You know, Satan doesn't present himself as the devil. He presents himself as God. That's why in the Quran, Satan is demeaned, and Allah is presented in a grandiose fashion, because Satan doesn't want to be known as the adversary. He wants to be known as God. And so you'll find smiling faces and sweet personalities associated with the mediums and spiritualists. They can't earn a living if they were had, you know, flames that were shooting out of their eyeballs. So to answer the first question, there's not a lot of things that God calls an abomination, but one of those things specifically that he speaks of as being an abomination is spiritualism. Those who try to communicate with dead individuals, with the spirits that have, or souls of individuals that have passed away, or that wish to communicate with spirits. God calls such a thing an abomination. So God's view on it is that it is disgusting. Now, God is capable, when he so wishes, to have one of his spiritual representatives, one of his malach, communicate with humans. And occasionally he will do so, but when they communicate, it requires no special attentiveness, no special training on behalf of the recipient of the message. The messenger simply comes and talks to the person in the language that they are most accustomed to hearing. And it happens very infrequently, but it does happen. Now, second to that, there is the reality that there are two types of spirits that are in our world. One is the spiritual messengers of Yahweh who do his bidding. We mistakenly refer to them as angels, but they are spiritual envoys. They operate in a command and control structure. They have no free will. They simply do what Yah asks them to do, and they are greater than we are in the sense that they are immortal. Even God can't kill a spirit. He can incarcerate them, but he cannot kill them. And without free will, they have huge limitations that we trump them on in terms of the capacity to love, the capacity to be creative. And that's why Yahweh chooses to love us and use the Malach. There are lots of fallen Malach who have associated with HaSatan. And they are far more likely to engage in this world than are Yahuwah's Malach. and far more likely to influence than are Yahweh's Moloch. And so what you find is that it is possible for a spiritualist to actually communicate with a spirit that is not so much of the deceased, but of HaSatan. And because those spirits are eternal, now they're not omnipresent, they don't have that capability, and for the most part, they're unable to physically influence the world, although they can inspire, and I use that in a very negative sense, confuse is probably more appropriate. So the spiritualist, when they're actually making contact with a spirit, it would be a spirit of HaSatan. It would be what we would refer to as a demon, and God is extraordinarily antagonistic towards such things. He calls it an abomination. Now, returning to our review of the Torah, remember we've been part of a long series of programs devoted to the most crucial issue as it would relate to an American, European, and South Pacific audience, the predominant audience for this program, on what is the dominant issue that's going to separate the presentation, the conclusions on the second hour of this program from mainstream religions. And the mainstream religion of most of Europe, America, and the South Pacific, like New Zealand and Australia, particularly places where English is a primary language, which isn't a prerequisite for this show, but it certainly makes it easier to be a listener to this show, that the differentiation between Christianity and Yah's Torah teaching is right at the fulcrum of where we exist in the second hour of this program. And that Christians think that they are worshiping the God who inspired their Bible, which includes their Old Testament, which includes the Torah. But yet they think that the Torah has been annulled, that it is no longer valid. And they think this because of Paul's letters and the letter written called Hebrews. They have been beguiled in this way. And so we devote a significant part of this program and have been to presenting Yahweh's perspective on his Torah so that those who are still Christians, those who have been influenced by Christianity, would know God's position. And so long as Christians know God's position and therefore can make a rational and informed decision so that they can compare their religion, which they have placed their beliefs, compared to Yahweh's testimony, then we're in great shape. At that point, if they choose to ignore God's testimony, that's their choice. At least they've done so with the information available to them, information that their church would try to preclude them from considering. And what they choose from that point is theirs alone. So what I'd like to do here is I'm going to repeat a passage that we considered once before because it speaks of the importance of being strong, being courageous, being alert, being secure in our observations of Yah's Torah and our presentation of the Torah, recognizing that if you're going to do what we do on this program, you're going to find that the vast majority of people are going to be hostile to you. They're going to resort to character assassination because they will find it impossible to confront Yah's testimony in an informed, rational way, and so they will simply attempt to kill the messenger. So this reads, exclusively, only, prevail. And don't use any other means to prevail other than this one means. I want you to use one means to prevail. God is saying, use exclusively this one means to prevail by being strengthened and growing firm, strong and courageous, and being very alert, being bold, by means of the one means now of being prepared, being strengthened, being bold, is by means of being observant, for the purpose of acting upon, celebrating, engaging in, and profiting, consistent with the Torah. If you observe the Torah and are prepared and equipped by it, then and only by it, you will prevail. You'll grow firm. You can be bold. You can be blunt. And so it continues, exclusively with the Torah, which as a result of the relationship, Moshe, my servant, guided and instructed you, turning not aside from it, to the right or to the left, that you may gain understanding as a result of the teaching in everything. Wherever you walk, is what Yahweh says. This is from the book named Yosha, which means Yahweh Saves 1:7. This not only conveys God's position that the Torah should be our lone source of information so that we can boldly, bluntly, courageously affirm His truth, but that also that the Torah is not comprised of laws, but instead is comprised of teaching, which leads to understanding. And the moment that switch flips in your head, that you disregard Paul and Christian propaganda that the Torah is comprised of laws which you cannot keep, to teaching which will enable you to understand. The moment you see the Torah from Yah's perspective, the switch goes off and enlightenment becomes possible. It is, of all of the things that we can share with you, this concept is the most important. Understanding what the Torah represents. That it does not represent laws which you must obey, and if you don't obey, curse you. To instead, it is God's teaching, His guidance, which leads to understanding so that we might respond to what Yahweh is offering and benefit from it. And the realization that the primary guidance in the Torah is specifically directed to understanding the covenant, its conditions, and its benefits, as well as its byproduct, which is our salvation. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back with Larry after the break and continue our discussion on not only Yah's Torah, but the differences between the Torah's teaching and Christian doctrine.
Making the...
Shattering Myths. I am your host. Just as an interesting program note, the man that I think is the most articulate, best informed, and most rational spokesperson on Islam goes by the name of IQ Rasoli. He lives in London, but he has agreed to call into the program this Friday, and will spend at least the first hour with IQ. I think IQ is an agnostic, and he has a copy of An Introduction to God, which I sent him over a year ago, and I haven't heard from IQ in much of this last year, but hopefully from an agnostic's point of view, he'll even stay on and we can discuss An Introduction to God in the second hour. But if you're interested in understanding Islam, its motivations, the motivations behind Islamic terrorism and the headlines in today's news, there is no more better informed, more rational or articulate spokesperson on this than IQ Rasoli, and he will be, as I say, our guest on Friday morning. Larry, the passage I've just read, I know, is one that resonates with you. You have devoted yourself to being blunt, bold, as a result of Yah's Torah. And while the thing that I think is germane here is God is saying, before you go and become blunt and bold, before you are strengthened in this regard, you need to do your homework first. I have so many people who write me and they say, you know, I shared what you wrote with somebody and they came back with all of these criticisms. How do I respond to them? And my response is, why didn't you read and come to understand what you sent before you sent it? You know, it's that don't rely on somebody else's understanding until you yourself understand the Torah. Don't preach the Torah. But once you understand the Torah and you understand God's antagonism towards religion, and then that knowledge and understanding permeates you, and you can now, you now are equipped to do this, by all means, go, be bold, be blunt. But don't do so until yourself know.
I had a situation yesterday, and this is one of the things I wanted to call in about. You remember our caller that called in the other day? Well, he found me on FB, and he joined our group.
Uh-huh.
And Roger opened up another group that was basically just a debate group. You know,
uh-huh.
Is Christianity false or something like that? Or what is the foundations of Christianity, I believe. So he put me in the group. And, you know, the Christians come in and right away start with the, I believe in Jesus, period, you know.
Right.
I make a post, you know, I believe till I turn blue in the face. I'm going to get a bumper sticker that says that.
Okay.
Well, which
of course isn't an argument. It's first of all, there is no Jesus. His name is Yahusha. If you don't know his name, I can guarantee you, you do not know him. And so, if you're believing in a name which is a myth, then you're believing in a myth. And of course, the myth of the Christian Jesus is based very closely to Dionysus and to Bacchus and to Camus and to Osiris. And but beyond all of that, the biggest issue of all with I'll believe until I'm blue in the face is that belief is irrelevant. It's God never asks us to believe him. Belief fills the gap when you don't know. Those who know don't need faith. Those who understand don't need to believe. And so all of these all of these statements, let me just finish this one thought, Larry. All of these statements that God is making in his Torah are specifically designed. He uses observation, which is the source of knowledge, and then thinking, which leads to understanding. Teaching about evidence leads to understanding. God wants us to know and to understand so that we can trust and rely. And once you come to know and understand who God is and what he's offering, faith and belief are counterproductive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's about the path. It's about getting on the path, understanding the path, understanding it's no accident you're on the path, understanding that Yah reached out, you answered. That's what it is. It's nothing more than that. It's not about Larry's persona. You know, I was on there and I threw no less than five verses down about how important it was to keep both Yahweh's and Yahusha's name. I threw a number of them down talking about how important the Torah was.
Yep. Well, Larry, we're going to have to return to this discussion right after the break. I can see that you're emotional about this, and that's probably a good thing. But let's listen to the kinds of debates that take place between Christians and those who actually know Yah. Our number is 877-300-7645. We have Larry with us today, and we're talking about the reaction of individuals when you present Yah's Torah teaching. Now, I would want to before Larry goes on, because I think he has a specific event, because he was talking about a specific site that he was invited to participate on here recently. The one thing that I would like to share, just as a pretext for, and I don't know what Larry is going to say, but as a pretext for all of this, is that God is definitely wants us to be blunt and bold. And God himself gets emotionally involved in this discussion. His Torah is teaching from his. He wants everybody to be aware of it, and he is angry at those who promote false religious agendas which are opposed to it, like Christianity, for example. But God is not forceful in his approach, in the sense of the Torah is there. You can choose to observe it or not. God is just saying, but before you go off and you're bold and you interact with people, get prepared first. Observe first, learn first, come to understand first, and then go out and you'll be strengthened and you'll prevail. The second thing is that if you look at the example of both Yahweh and Yahusha, what you find is they don't get in people's grills unless those people approach them. For example, you look at Yosha during his last visit here. When the rabbis and scribes, the political and religious types, would confront him, he would expose and condemn them. And he was right down their throats. And he was aggressive. He was blunt. He was uncompromising. He was angry. He just laid them low. But he didn't go and seek them. They sought him. The same thing is true if you look at any one of the sites that I have, introtogod.org, yadayah.com, questioningpaul.com, even prophetofdoom.net. They're there. If you send an email to me because you have read them, then you have come to me. And at that point, if you're promoting Islam or socialist secular humanism or political correctness or Christianity, you come to me, and it is appropriate at that point for me to respond bluntly and aggressively in terms of shutting down your argument on behalf of your false religion, whatever it may be. As a matter of fact, this whole series of programs is a response to a Christian who read Prophet of Doom and wrote me a letter on behalf of Christianity at Prophet of Doom. If you come to me, I'm going to respond aggressively, bluntly and boldly, particularly if what you're saying is contrary to Yah's Torah. And I've taken my time, I've researched his Torah, come to understand what God is offering, so I'm in a position to share God's testimony bluntly and boldly. And for the most part, that is what Larry has attempted to do. But evidently, things went awry, I guess, Larry, over the last couple of days. So let me have you continue with your story.
Well, I'm not at all sure that things went awry. I just want to point out something here. You know, there's levels of knowledge. There's no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you walk into the covenant, what you don't drag with you is a lot of Christianity.
No, you don't drag any.
I'm not going to tolerate it around me. I'm really not.
Yeah.
You know, and the concept that we're to go out there and become everybody's rug mat and say, punch me. And you know, these are things that are really advanced. These concepts are advanced because of tradition and I'm sure because of many, many, many copy edits where they portray this caricature of Yahusha that they call Jesus as sort of this guy out there forgiving everybody he can while he walks humbly in submission and is on his knees and face all day long. And, of course, knowing Yahusha, none of that's true.
No.
And for somebody
he did humble himself, but he wasn't a humble individual. Now, what I mean by that is, for God to take on human form, he has to humble himself. Of course, he is taking an aspect of himself and diminishing that aspect of himself. And for God to himself pay the price of as the Passover lamb and serving us through unleavened bread, through matzah, that is an extraordinarily humbling thing for Yahweh to do.
And that's a given. What I'm saying is the caricature of sort of a flowery You know, I'm out looking to find everybody in the world I can forgive. And then this promotes the idea of the Nicolaitis, where grace and forgiveness is what it's all about, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's really what they've done in the copy edits or even the complete write-ins that they've done in what can be called today a Christian New Testament. Because they probably don't even, we know they do not mirror, in fact, they're opposites in many cases of the actual oldest parchments that we have out there. We have many examples of that.
Yeah, Larry, let me just interrupt here a second, because I was searching when we got the call during the break as to things that God called an abomination. And one of the things that God called an abomination is the prayer of those who are not Torah observant.
Right.
So this very notion that God hears every prayer and loves every individual and knows every individual is torn asunder by this very statement where God says, I don't hear the prayers of those who are not Torah observant. In fact, if I were to see them, I would see them with their faces covered with dung. Because the words of those who are not Torah observant, to me, are an abomination. And so, since Yahusha is nothing more or less than a diminished manifestation of Yahweh, and since Yahweh said that his words will flow out of his mouth, so what we find is that Yahusha uniformly affirms what Yahweh says in the Torah. And therefore, this notion that God is somehow listening to every person's prayer and that loves all the little children and wants everybody to be with him in heaven is completely inconsistent with what he actually said and did. And more importantly, it's inconsistent with the Torah.
And you know, I just want to point one other thing out here, just real quickly, and then I'm going to go. This is never about Larry. It's about Yahweh's words. And people should not sit around and pretend that they care what the creator of the universe and the savior wrote if they're not willing to consider his words. At that point, they don't count. They don't count to me. They don't count to him. Kindness is not about compromise. It's never about smiling while people are lying to you and trying to become popular. Kindness is getting the truth out there and laying it out just the way it really is and helping explain that truth. But there is no way that we're to sit back and be attacked on all sides and act like a rug mat. Because that isn't kindness. That's called weakness.
Yeah,
that's what I'll say.
The only place that I have just a slight differential here, and before I even speak of the differential between what you just said and my view on all of this, and what I think is Yah's view on all of this, is that God has let us know that when we present his view, his perspective, and we expose and condemn, as he does, the religious and political view and perspective, that our opponents are going to respond using the ad hominem argument. And the ad hominem argument is a fallacy. What people do that are unable to refute what God is saying, because what you said is you laid down Yah's statements out of the Torah, if your evidence is Yah's testimony, since they can't debate God, what they do is they use ad hominem as the argument, and they impugn character flaws on the messenger. Now, the reality is Larry is flawed. I'm flawed. And so if that is going to be your means of attacking, you can prevail in the right audience because the flaws are there for everyone to see. No one is denying the flaws, but the flaws are irrelevant. They are irrelevant. What's relevant is what Yah said. Now, the one place that I have a little difference here is that when someone attacks me personally, when and that is turns out to be about 99% of the cases where someone will write me on one of my sites and I will respond and say, you know, what you're saying is untrue.
Fairly often this happens too. I'm aware. You're very aware of how it feels constantly.
But, right. Yeah. And in fact, if you were to Google my name, you would find hundreds of thousands of references, and the majority of those references are character assassinations. Now, so... And I have never been to any of those sites and will never be to any of them, and I never respond to them. Never. When somebody attacks my character, I don't respond. I don't care. I find
that attacked. Your character gets attacked vis-a-vis me. They're telling me all about you.
And by the way, I don't want to be defended. I won't defend myself. And I don't want to be defended. The reason that's the case is you're irrelevant, I'm irrelevant. What's relevant is Yah's message. And so what I will tell people who turn their arguments so that it becomes an ad hominem assault is that's a fallacy. You know, if you want to have a discussion of the facts and the evidence and you want to use reason, then let's continue a discussion. If what you want to do is assail the messenger and to condemn me, for example, this whole email that we're responding to on the Christian, that's exactly what they did. They turned this into an ad hominem argument against me. We don't need to defend ourselves. The one who defends us is, in the only perspective that matters, is Yahweh. That's
deliver
one of the
my enemy into my hand.
Right.
They that's do it every time. I
right.
know how that works.
Right. So
I'm saying to set back and be a rug mat in the sense that you don't respond. And they're going to get a response from me. And if it gets down to just attacking somebody on a personal level, you know, oh, well, so be
well,
it.
Yeah, at that point, you can walk away. We'll return to this discussion on Shattering Myths after the break and discuss why it is so important that we don't resort to ad hominem arguments and that we ultimately walk away from those who deploy them. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. To the final segment of Shattering Myths for today. Larry is still on the line with us. We're having a discussion about how we should respond in terms of approaching the myths, typically religious myths, and how we should represent Yahweh's testimony in the midst of such environments. It is interesting to note, first of all, that with rare exceptions, Yahweh is not the aggressor as it relates to his testimony. He will take assertive action and will go and seek out an enemy when the lives of his children are at stake. For example, he rescued them from Egypt. So God will be assertive and seek out foes when the lives of his children are at stake. But otherwise, God is responsive. When people come to him, if they come to him and say things which are untrue, he is extraordinarily aggressive in combating them. Now, what's interesting is that I was sent part of this alleged debate that took place at this site, Larry. And the first person that says, you know, I want no part of this, actually says that he wants that he thinks that God wants us to coexist with our fellow man and to love everybody and not to and to compromise. And then he actually ends it by saying, cast the first stone. And it's just amazing to me that you would quote that individual, who will be nameless, anonymous.
The fraudulent verse that didn't exist that was thrown into the Textus Receptus.
Right, which is just amazing. The most quoted line of Jesus, the Christian Jesus in Christian churches, is the story of where the adulterous woman comes to him and he writes something in the sand and a bunch of people are accusing her of committing adultery. And then the Christian Jesus turned to the people and says, "He who was without sin cast the first stone." And so it's always been, it's used in Christianity to say, unless you are without sin yourself, you should not criticize
anything.
And so if the story is true, if it came from Yahusha, then unless we are perfect, we shouldn't say anything. Now, that would mean, by the way, that you would have no Torah, prophets, Psalms, and you would have no Christian New Testament. They would all go away because only the words of Yahusha himself would be considered flawless. And Yah chose to communicate through messengers who were flawed. In fact, the most articulate messenger in the entirety of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms is a fellow named Dod, who we have corrupted to David. And so God's position on this is the antithesis of what is said there. But what you find is that when you investigate the beginning of the 8th chapter of the book of Yahochanan, is that has this story, in the thousands upon thousands of manuscripts that have been found dating to the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th century, it doesn't exist, and it was not written until the 8th century, which means it is an absolute religious fraud designed specifically to discourage people from responding in this way. Here's the truth.
And from being judgmental. You know, exercising an Isama is important. This is one of the things I wanted to say. It's going to look like a game of dodgeball having a debate with me. When you get into 7 years of tribulation and everybody around you is dying and they're diseased and you haven't had a bath in a month and you sleep outside and you're begging for a loaf of bread.
Well, yeah, but the bottom line is that if you are loving, to be loving, you must hate. It is impossible to be genuinely loving and not hate. And what I mean by that is that a father who does not hate that which is harmful to his children is not loving them. And that's why you find in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and in Yahusha's words, such hateful statements. Because the only way for him to express true love for his children and for his covenant is to hate those things which are destructive to it. God doesn't want us to be tolerant. That's the entire message of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, is to be intolerant of the things of the Gentiles.
Correctness won't buy you any points with Yahweh? Really?
No. God wants us to be judgmental. In fact, that very statement that judge not lest you be judged, it actually reads, don't separate. Or you will be separated. Don't separate people from Yahweh, or you will be separated from him. The actual God, Yahweh, his nature, his persona is so radically different than religious people see him. And that is really the crux of this argument. I am Yada. This has been A Shattering Mist. Be back with you again tomorrow.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of